all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
And a whole bunch of other good folks. Greg Bach, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, Selena Heller, meteorologist Brittany Merlot, all here on this April 22nd, 2024, Girl Scout Leader Appreciation Day, IT Service Provider Day, National Jelly Bean Day. Anybody want to stake claim to being the biggest lover of jelly beans in the bunch here?
No.
I like my jelly beans.
Wow.
We all hate them. Wow.
You like black? Is that what you said?
Ah!
I like them a lot.
Ew.
All right. We found our outlier over here.
Can I cut Selena's feed?
That was me.
Oh, who said that?
Kristen.
Yeah, I do not like black jelly beans.
From Rob, good morning from Tigerton. It's sunny and 34 degrees. I want to report my Aunt Mary Lehman passed away early Sunday morning. We need to be kind and helpful to each other. Rob, our condolences to you, and thank you for continuing to check in and keep us updated on things. An update on the weather now from Brittany Merlot. A gorgeous morning up here on Lake Wissota. Just
finally
amazing. But it's going to get a little windy.
It is. That's the only bad thing today is the winds will be gusting up to about 35 miles per hour, of course, creating a little bit of a wind chill, unfortunately, but highs hitting the 60s. We're climbing to the 60s today. And with those winds and the warm temperatures and the sunshine is bright, we are still in a high to very high fire danger across the state. So be careful of burning grass fires. I know there's some over just on the western border, right across there into Minnesota, but the state as a whole has done pretty good. I'm proud of you.
Good job, people.
Yes. And I do want to say today is Earth Day. It's April 22nd, Earth Day. So if you can do anything, cleaning up, even just eliminating plastic use, plant a tree, anything you can do today would be awesome. But otherwise,
look at it. Here's Alicia putting it on Facebook. I use an aluminum 40-ounce cup for water. Good for her.
Yeah, girl.
Get
Rob,
it.
Rob noting every day should be Earth Day. So yeah, a bunch of folks doing their part.
That's a grand amount of water.
Yeah, so today's the day. If you usually don't do anything, try to do at least one thing if you can. It'll make a big difference. But otherwise, we do have some rain moving in later on this evening. It'll be after sunset, except for in the western parts of the state, you might see that roll in just before sunset. Otherwise, not too much going on until tomorrow, where we do have some storm chances by the afternoon.
All right, Brittany, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Happy Earth Day to you.
You too.
All right, have a great day. And Rob wanted to add, by the way, his favorite Glenn Campbell song is Sunflower from 1977. I'd completely forgotten about that one. So look at it. Greg's already on it.
Like, well, no, I was just, darn it. The whole joke was going to be, I should have kept it on the song the whole time. And like, oh, you mean Wichita Lineman is your favorite song? And then I just would have played this.
Yeah, that was a typo. That was a typo on Sunflower.
Exactly.
In the Up North News Daily.
Sorry.
In the Up North News Daily Newsletter, which you can sign up for over at upnorthnewswi.com, Christina Lori has some Earth Day stories, including how there really wouldn't be an Earth Day without Wisconsin. Because as we've discussed here, in 1969, one Wisconsin man had an idea, why not devote an entire day to teaching people about the environment and to send a message to Washington that most people want government to help them solve environmental problems. That man was Gaylord Nelson, and that idea became Earth Day. More in our newsletter. Also, my article on what lawmakers didn't get done this spring, part infinity. This one on PFAS and not getting rid of these industrial chemicals that are still in our water. And how fascinating it is, Kristen, and I mean in a fascinating in a bad way, that people have managed to politicize not polluting our water and our air, and that the PFAS money is still hanging out there on Earth Day, and you're accused of being woke when maybe we just don't want bad water?
It's not just us. In Marinette, so in the northern part of the 8th Congressional District, we have the third most contaminated PFAS site in the world. Bad. It's very, very bad.
Would you say that again, please? What?
In Marinette, we have the third most contaminated PFAS site in the world.
Oh my
it
God.
Is very bad. We need help. The people who live there are being exposed to these chemicals every single day. And not just them, but the things that are made there are being made with PFAS water. The crops that are being grown with contaminated water. And those things are going all over the country. So people are being harmed because we are failing to clean up this environmental catastrophe. And it's all tied up in politics,
petty politics right with Republican legislators looking to protect the polluters, protecting industry when they could be moving that money for cleanup at any given time. So to bring the conversation back to Earth Day and some of the more conventional things that were done, Selena Heller told us earlier there was I'm still processing this number, 1,500 volunteers cleaning up around Eau Claire over the weekend.
Yes, 1,500. As of Friday, there were 1,474 people signed up, but then more trickled in even on Saturday. So bright and early Saturday morning, it was 30 degrees. Mm-hmm. So we had to find Emery's snow pants and boots, and we bundled up and went out. And we do the same area every year, which is down by the Chippewa River, the confluence, where the rivers meet, Eau Claire River and Chippewa. And we clean up that area. We spread mulch, pick up garbage, pull weeds, and do all sorts of things. But people sweep the sidewalks downtown and get everything all cleaned up. And it was just, it's incredible the amount of people. It's so heartwarming.
Did you talk to any of those people?
I did. PK Kang and her husband Kent were out there, and they said they do it every year. And so she was one of the 1,500 volunteers.
We do this just about every year, and it's just a great way to take care of our city, our community, the planet, and it's giving back. So I think everyone should do it if they get the chance.
Very nice. So there. Now folks, next year when this comes up, go, oh, I don't want to be like the only one. You will not be the only one.
No.
You are in good company. Another one of the stories that you worked on over the past week dealt with some women who have been touring the country on behalf of the Biden campaign, but less about the campaigning part and more about the dangers of abortion bans at the state level. You'll recall we had a woman from Texas on the program last week to talk about her visit to Wisconsin and why. Another one of the women was from Louisiana, and I believe you spoke to her.
Yes. Oh, these women have incredible stories. Not lovely to hear stories, but Caitlin Joshua is from Louisiana, and they have a near total abortion ban. They did. And when she was pregnant and she was very scared, they didn't want to treat her when she went to the ER. I believe she was about 11, 12 weeks pregnant, and she kept trying to go to the ER, and she was bleeding heavily, and they pretty much just turned her away and said, well, they didn't come out and say, you know, we can't really treat you, but just go home and pretty much see what happens. And so this is Caitlin Joshua from Louisiana, who came to Wisconsin last week.
At this point, I was losing so much blood, the security guard literally put me in a wheelchair. And as many of y'all know, the standard treatment for a miscarriage at this point, 11, almost 12 weeks, is a DNC, is abortion care. Yet this second hospital staff told me they weren't doing that at this moment and told me to go home and wait. So ultimately, it took me weeks, almost a month, to completely pass that pregnancy at home, and I was terrified. But it was in that moment I finally realized why we lose so many Black women in this country as a result of being denied care. I received hundreds of letters from women across Louisiana, across the world, actually, who've had similar experiences, and we know this is happening in states across the country. Because of abortion bans, physicians simply cannot practice medicine based on their training and their expertise.
And Caitlin said even at one point, I think she went to the ER three times, and at one point they just sent her home and said, we're praying for you. And she just couldn't believe.
Am I right in here? Like when she said they sent me home, did I hear you audibly gasp?
There were other people.
Okay. Because I just heard.
Yes.
Like it was.
Yes. Yes, that there was a gasp indeed. From it was a roundtable discussion with everyone there. A lot of women, a few men, and they did audibly gasp because the stories that they told and throughout their processes and all of this were just awful to hear that they were treated like this and just pretty much sent home. Like, well, if you get worse, then maybe we can treat you.
So we're all over here kind of, you know, gasping or looking, you know, shocked. And Kristen is sitting here very still because sadly this is way too familiar over and over again.
I am incensed that women have to share these deeply personal stories in order to get the care that they need. These are the women who I take care of. And these conversations should be happening in exam rooms as we are trying to find solutions to their problems, not forcing them to go home, suffer complications that affect their future fertility and their family for the rest of their lives, and then have to go on a stage and talk about it so that people understand what's happening. This is unbelievable. Nobody has to do this with their cancer diagnosis or with their urinary tract infection problem, but we're putting women in a place where we should never, ever expect them to have to go.
And yet we do. And so that's why visits like this continue to happen. And that would include the Vice President of the United States, Kamala Harris, coming back to Wisconsin, going to be in the Eau Claire area today, is going to have an announcement about nursing homes and some new rules. But there isn't a doubt, Kristen, that she's also going to be talking about abortion rights coming back to this very important swing state.
Yeah, I'm sure she will. This is the issue that's motivating people to get out and have these conversations because we know we have to now. You know, 1 in 4 women in this country will have an abortion in her lifetime. And those are just the women who have abortions. What about miscarriages? Most people will suffer a miscarriage. 50% of pregnancies, up to 50%, end in miscarriage. So when we're talking about complicated pregnancies, fertility, how you build your family, all of this stuff belongs in the realm of medical care, not in the realm of politics. And that's the point she's trying to drive home. And so many of us are trying to drive home.
Exactly. All right. Thank you, Selena. Kristen, we're going to talk more about the Vice President's trip coming up in just a bit. But first, a little sports here at 7:18. After the break, we'll talk about the Bucks' big victory to open the playoffs against Indiana. As far as the Brewers go, they swept that 3-game weekend series against the St. Louis Cardinals with a 2-0 win. It was the Brewers' first series sweep at Busch Stadium since late in the 2018 season. The Brewers now have the best road record in the major leagues at 10-2. Owen Miller had a 2-run single in the 7th inning to seal the deal for the Brewers, who are now in Pittsburgh for 4 games starting tonight. Joe Ross starts for Milwaukee, and you can hear that game on several stations along the Civic Media Radio Network. Go to civicmedia.us to learn more. We'll be back in a sec. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin, when you're here, you're up north. We'll be right back. One more from Paul Carrick for his very diverse career in rock and roll. But Kristen pointed out to me, in a case of burying the lead, I mean, not only is it Peter Frampton's birthday, but I completely whiffed out on, they announced over the weekend, the new class to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and Peter Frampton's in it.
Yes. How exciting is that?
No.
Look and at this. Cher, and Mary J. Blige, and Ozzy Osbourne.
And A Tribe Called Quest.
And A Tribe Called Quest.
And Foreigner. And Kool in the Gang. Kool in the Gang.
Foreigner.
Yeah, Kool in the Gang and Ozzy Osbourne. That's going to be a show.
Foreigner ran a hard campaign to get in. Like, they got their rock and roll friends to make videos saying, Foreigner's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. What's that about? And they're like, all right, they're in.
All right.
There will also be Musical Excellence Awards given to the late Jimmy Buffett and to Dionne Warwick, among others. So the induction ceremony will be held on October 19th. It will be streamed live from Cleveland on Disney Plus, and then it will air later on ABC and be available on the Hulu. And again, if you haven't seen last year's induction ceremony, which I think Disney put up on the 1st of January or something like that, I don't know if it's still there, but you should go take a look because it was one heck of a show.
When they asked Peter Frampton, he was like, wow. Wow, 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 wow. If you're a Peter Frampton fan, you get that joke. If you're not, ask your grandparents about Peter Frampton.
I still liked your rendition.
Thank you. Thank you.
Can you see we give him a voice synthesizer or just auto-tune or something like that for the rest of the show?
Thank it was also you. The 8th anniversary of Prince's death. Prince.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, that happened over the weekend.
Yes.
Yep. And in fact, over the next couple of days, our history lesson will include some of the ways that other artists paid tribute to Prince whenever they had their like first live show, you know, back after that announcement was made. Mm-hmm. All right. As we mentioned, the Vice President, Kamala Harris, is coming to La Crosse today. Also, she will be announcing some new federal government rules requiring nursing homes to have minimum staffing levels. She will note that President Biden first announced this plan back in the 2022 State of the Union address, but the administration has taken longer to nail down a final rule as healthcare worker shortages plague the industry. Right now, current law only requires that nursing homes have, quote unquote, sufficient staffing, leaving it up to the states for interpretation. Allies of older adults have sought the regulation for decades. The rules will almost certainly draw pushback from the nursing home industry. So that will be a topic that you're hearing in the news. Harris was in Madison last month talking about abortion rights and in Waukesha in January on the same topic and kicking off a nationwide tour ever since. And Kristen, I we've said it so many times, and yet it still holds true that this issue, the Dobbs decision and the backlash to it, has not lost one iota of energy from an electorate that says this was a bridge too far.
Because it's not a political issue. This is a personal issue that affects people's lives now and well into the future. And people recognize that. And I think the Republicans are really going to recognize that come November, because people are motivated to get out and vote on this issue because the impact is so great on their personal lives.
Switching out to the Milwaukee Bucks game, 7:24 on this Monday morning. They opened up their series in the first round of the playoffs against the Indiana Pacers. Giannis did not play. We're not sure when he's coming back with a strained left calf. So you would expect that this morning we were going to say something like, oh, the Bucks really got blown out. No. Worked the other way around. Kristen, that was a very exciting game to watch. Damian Lillard could not miss during that first half when he scored 35 in the first half.
He was unbelievable. What a fun game to watch. At the very beginning, you know, I was a little nervous because we were Giannis-less, and then Dame just was on fire. He was ridiculous. What a blast.
Giannis-less.
Yeah.
Giannis-less, but Dame-full.
Dame-full. Oh, very nice. Well,
and Giannis was there on the sidelines cheering. I love the chemistry of this team because you can see how much fun they're having. Pat Bev is defense and just how they were all scrambling. It almost looked like a college game. They were playing so hard. They were breathless at the end of the game.
But they were also upbeat. They were clearly feeding off the energy of the crowd. Mm-hmm. So game two is at the Fiserv Forum tomorrow. And so folks that were writing off the Bucks, maybe hold off just a little bit. All right. In news that is quintessentially Wisconsin, Culver's is planning to add 51 new restaurants this year, which will take them just shy of 1,000 total locations. The news was first broken by the food website Eat This Not That to say that Culver's had filed a franchise disclosure document outlining the expansion in 13 states, all of them already part of the current Culver's map: Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Kansas, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, North Carolina, Ohio, South Carolina, Tennessee, and of course, Wisconsin. The chain added 52 stores last year after adding 55 stores in the 2 years before that, 50 stores in 2019 pre-COVID. So, I mean, they're going to hit 1,000 stores before much longer. Although, by the way, just to put it in perspective, McDonald's plans to open 10,000 new locations by the end of 2027.
All right.
Still a little David and Goliath going on here, but David's not slacking off.
When we were in Georgia earlier this year, we were driving from Atlanta to Macon, and I saw a sign for Culver's, and I was like, what? I was so surprised they were that far down south.
And apparently, I don't have the article in front of me, but I believe Florida and Georgia are two of the states where they're going to do the most expanding. So clearly, You know, they're catching on. When I visit our daughter in Idaho Falls, and you come across the way, to the Snake River there in downtown, and then there's this Culver's that just appears, you know, over the horizon. It's like, a little bit of Wisconsin here.
Hooray. When I have a family here from Eau Claire that just moved to Florida last year to start Culver's down there. So they
have really?
This one down there. Yeah.
Very when I cool. drive to Minnesota, I know where all the Culver's are so that I can plan my stops accordingly.
Mm-hmm. I interviewed Craig Culver years ago, and I think when they first opened in Eau Claire, and he was very nice.
We should open a Culver's, guys. We should open a Culver's.
By the way, that website, Eat This, Not That, I'd never heard of it before, but they have a lot of food industry news, but they also have some intriguing or weird headlines. There's the 9 healthiest fast food breakfast burritos. I have a hard time believing there's 9 that are healthy at all, much less the 9 healthiest.
All right, Pat, just tell us. Come on. Tell me right now.
No, I have to tell you that there's also every fast food oatmeal ranked by nutrition. Here's 15 popular fruit snacks ranked by sugar content. Here's a copycat shamrock shake recipe. And here are 9 restaurant chains that serve the best mussels. And I got to say, I love mussels when they're done well. You can definitely have bad ones. I don't know that I would have them from a chain necessarily.
Long John Silver's. Just makes me think of Long John Silver's.
She says with no emotion or happiness at all.
It feels weird, doesn't it?
Did something go wrong after you ate there? Or
it just, you know, mussels, fast food, chain restaurants. I don't know. Something's just not.
Something seems off. Exactly. All right. We'll continue our conversation on this Monday morning, April 22nd, in just a bit from Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Again, it was on this day in 1989 that Madonna's Like a Prayer, the single and the album, hit number one, marking Madonna's third consecutive number one album. Back now on Up North News Radio, Kristen Lyerly is here, Greg Bach is here, Selena Heller had to toddle off. You can read the stuff that she's doing for us over at upnorthnews.wi.com. A little bit of a melancholy story, just wanted to pass along. Again, people of a certain age remember Terry Anderson, the Associated Press correspondent who became one of America's longest held hostages after he was kidnapped off the streets in war-torn Lebanon in 1985 and held for nearly 7 years. Terry Anderson passed away over the weekend at 76 from complications after a recent heart surgery. In 1985, he became one of several Westerners abducted by members of the Shiite Muslim group Hezbollah during a time of war that had plunged Lebanon into chaos. Again, Terry Anderson passed away at the age of 76. The House of Representatives took care of several matters over the weekend, an aid package for Ukraine, one for Israel, one for Taiwan. And then there was a fourth bill that basically had the House voting for a possible ban on TikTok in the U.S. But as many others have noted, don't be expecting the app to go away anytime soon. Kristen, you've continued to make little campaign update videos from your run for Congress out there. I've occasionally put up things most recently about Eric Hovde's, you know, nursing home quote. You know, you said what you said. But again, it's not going anywhere, not anytime soon. So, you can make of it what you want, Kristen, and you and I both are sporadic users of it, we should say.
Yeah, well, you and I are both sporadic content creators. You are much better at it than I am. But, people watch TikTok videos. TikTok is a very, very popular platform, especially for young people. I mean, my kids are constantly scrolling TikTok. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's a big difference between what's happening politically and what's happening on the ground. And I wonder, with Mike Gallagher now leaving Congress, he's been a big part of the driving force behind this. I wonder what happens in the future with regards to TikTok.
Well, because again, what's at issue is that the parent company of TikTok, you know, basically because it's a Chinese company, it's essentially, you know, the Chinese government can do whatever it wants with the company, potentially get our data. But, you know, I heard over the weekend of yet another massive data breach and all the social security numbers that were, you know, exposed as a result. And I guess, Kristen, I don't know how anybody doesn't just assume at this point that everything is out there. Mm-hmm. And look, if the Chinese government or a hacker is somehow going to, you know, care about my stuff and target, you know, my little bank account here in Chippewa Falls, chances are, you know, between the FDIC or other things, I'm not going to suffer. I'm going to be made whole from this. Mm-hmm. Why? I'm much more concerned about a U.S.-based social media company, like the role that Facebook played in the 2016 election by spreading disinformation. I'd rather see that than just do what I saw Gallagher and others doing, was targeting China simply because they're, you know, a foreign company. That doesn't make them a bigger hazard than some of the social media things right here in the U.S.
Well, it makes us feel comfortable or uncomfortable because of the China connection. But Pat, I think you hit the nail on the head. All of these social media companies, no matter where they're based, they all have the potential to influence us in incredibly powerful ways that we often don't even recognize. You know, I feel like I'm pretty savvy. Like I pay attention to where my news comes from and I'm always thinking about fact checking and how can I validate what I'm seeing. But they're insidious and they use all of these little psychological tricks to pull you in and sell you things. That's the whole point. So I don't know that TikTok is any more dangerous than Facebook or Instagram or whatever the next thing is that's going to come out, which is why we need better regulation across the board. And they have this in Europe. We just are not following suit. There is a playbook out there. We can do better. We just have to.
And the funny thing is, this is coming primarily from a Republican Party that has been adamant about being pro-business and that government should not interfere in business. Mm-hmm. And yet we're going to carve out this exemption to our beliefs for this one company because it helps us, you know, make some kind of a point when there are, like you said, responsible ways to regulate industry in other places. And, you know, we just have an entire political party choosing not to do what's best for the people rather than for, you know, what you would call the corporate class.
Wait, so are you saying that the Republicans who want government out of everything are hypocrites? I'm just thinking about women's health care.
I was going to say, yeah, well, we don't want government, you know, running your life unless it's, you know, unless you're a woman, unless you're right. On a Chinese-owned app. And, you know, so many other examples where, again, I don't know what they're for. I know what they're against. They're against you having equal healthcare rights. They're, you know, against Chinese participation in some parts of the business sector, but God help this economy if we were to cut off China entirely. Mm-hmm. You know, comes back to what I said last weekend about Congressman Derek Van Orden saying, oh, we shouldn't be feeding China. We shouldn't be sending ag exports over there. It's like our number three trading partner. You know, mm-hmm. what happens if that goes away?
Well, say one thing and do another. You know, it's about this absolutism. Like, this is what I do all the time, but it's never what they do all the time. They say it, but then they're doing other things. And it also prevents them from being able to come to the table and compromise. Mm-hmm. Compromise is the key. That's what we saw with this border security bill. We saw very conservative members of Congress coming together with folks from the other side to create a bill that wasn't perfect for either side, but it was a step forward. And that's how you have to do this, one step forward at a time. But when you won't come to the table, which is what we've been seeing in the House, which is why our Congress has been impotent. I mean, they've been the least effective Congress in decades because they just can't have these conversations. They can't compromise.
No, they cannot. And it's to the detriment of all of us. Now, TikTok, you know, did try to essentially fight back or push back. And interestingly, a lot of folks seem to think that it backfired on them. They pushed hard on their 170 million U.S. users to call on Congress and voice their opposition. But apparently the ferocity of the pushback angered lawmakers and to them underscored how, you know, a foreign-owned company could suddenly influence, you know, 170 million U.S. consumers. In other words, what we call advertising.
Right. Representation. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, because we don't want those people, those young viewers of TikTok, we don't want those people lobbying Congress. We want to just talk to the actual lobbyists who make six and seven figure incomes, apparently. That's where we want to get our information from.
Well, they're not used to taking those inputs. They're used to living in that world where all they get is that lobbyist kind of level information. But what they need to hear from, who they need to hear from, are the people. And they've turned a blind eye to the people. But we're going to turn that around in November, Pat. And we're definitely turning it around in the 8th CD.
Yeah, there's did the 8th CD, the 8th Congressional District Democrats, they had their convention already, right?
Two weeks ago.
Okay. I know the 7th and the 3rd did. Tis the season. So,
right.
And nomination papers are out, right? You're in the signature collection mode.
We are circulating signatures like crazy. You know what's really fun? In the 8th Congressional District, we've been working together, not just me running for Congress, but the people who are running for Assembly seats and for Senate seats. We're all working together with other allies to do events and to get out and to door knock together, because it's all one big happy family. And we don't all agree on everything. We're not lockstep, but that's all part of the beauty of it. So it's about creating, collaborating, and creating that sense of community. I'm really excited to be part of it. And I have never heard people so excited about getting out and gathering signatures and doing the work. I mean, people are like, when's our next signature collection? Are you going to be there? Like, it's a party. Because it is.
It is such a difference from 10, 12 years ago when we're speaking just for the Democratic Party, the Republican Party has its own inner problems. But the problem a decade ago for Democrats was the silos that were built. Mm-hmm. You know, county parties were in a silo. The state party at the time didn't even really want to talk to the county parties. They wanted instead to talk to these ad hoc outside groups that were in their own little silos. And people finally got to talking about, you know, maybe building some bridges, you know, instead of mm-hmm. silos, and having people work together and not just, you know, go down the same street. And I mean that literally. There were times when I was campaigning and knocking on doors, and I had my own little piece of literature, you know, that I'd leave on the door, and get up to a door and I'd see a piece of literature with my face on it, and it was from some other allied group. Now, again, we couldn't coordinate with them, mm-hmm. but it was such a case of poor planning that you're covering the same neighborhood twice while another neighborhood's not being covered at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had that happen with my assembly campaign too. Mm-hmm. The lack of coordination it's inefficient. But I think what we're seeing is better coordination and just this enthusiasm, because people are feeling hopeful for the first time in a very long time.
Yeah. What I'm hoping to avoid is this was a case where, and again, there are a couple of folks currently in the legislature who could attest to this if you were to ask them, but they would, and I'll use the city of Eau Claire as an example. You'd have people, you'd have voters there getting angry because they're like, this is the fourth time you or somebody like you has visited me. I'm fine. And the campaign would be like, I could go across the street into the town of Washington or into the town of Union. But at the time, you had a party apparatus that was like, mm-hmm. oh, no, we're only going to focus on the cities because mm-hmm. that's where the concentrated voters are. But again, you cover them four times. You're not covering anybody literally just down the block because yeah. they're in a township instead of a city. And that had to end.
Oh, yeah. And we definitely have ignored rural areas because they're not as concentrated. It takes more time to go out and knock doors and meet people in rural areas. But you know who's doing a really good job with that? Emily Cephos in Appleton. She is deep canvassing. She's going out, talking to people, finding out what they really care about. It's not just about knocking on the doors and handing somebody a flyer. It is truly like, I want to represent you. Tell me how I can do that. And it's so authentic and real. And I think it's what we've all been thirsty for.
And for folks that, you know, she can't get to every door, she's been putting things up on TikTok. Renee Papalem has been putting stuff on TikTok. Mm-hmm. A lot of your colleagues and candidate friends and things like that, you know, they're using not just TikTok, but just social media overall. They're using it in a smarter way, a personable way, so that rather than putting a campaign ad up on TikTok. You're actually putting yourself, you, Kristen Lyerly, talking to the camera. Here's what we're doing today. Here's how you can help.
Well, and it's, I think, because we're actual real people who are running for these roles. We're not politicians. We're people who care and want to be the change that we're all craving in our communities. So what you see is us being us. And what we want to hear from the people that we hope to represent is how we can best represent them. Not what we're going to do for you, but like, how can we do it for you? How can we work together to make it happen? This is a really different time, Pat, and Wisconsin is the perfect place to be doing this, because this is the state of fighting Bob La Follette. This is a state where we built the state on community and working together and getting past our differences to achieve greater things. So if it can happen anywhere, it can happen in Wisconsin.
So for a candidate in this day and age, and you don't have to give specifics at all, but you know, we were already looking ahead on our calendar over the weekend and going, okay, all the weekends between now and Memorial Day, and thinking, well, what are we going to do this Memorial Day? Are you taking, like, I would imagine your amount of time off is somewhere near zero, and that, you know, any Memorial Day weekend plan probably involves a little bit of voter contact, but maybe not.
I love the voter contact. Mm-hmm. It's not hard for me, so I just really enjoy it. I also have two kids graduating in May, one from high school and one from college. So we're really focusing on a lot of local stuff and their friends and, you know, that family stuff. It's family first.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
No, we're planning for a party here in early July. And I can't remember if I mentioned that we had the garage sheetrocked, but we wanted the mildew resistant stuff, which apparently only comes in either green or purple, and they were out of green. So I now have the most purple garage anybody's ever seen.
It.
Oh, totally. We had conversations with the painter over the weekend. That purple is not lasting. We're not going into a party with a purple garage.
Can we go back to Prince, though, for a minute? I mean, you can call it your Prince garage.
We can in the... Have a great day, Kristen.
You too, Pat.
All right, Terry Bell is next. You're up north. A quick reminder that Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. And you can find several products from Courier Newsroom, not just Up North News, but several newsletters that include From the Front Lines by Kia Vakil, Stop the Presses from Mark Jacob, Control Alt Right Delete from Melissa Ryan, American Freak Show by Nina Burley, and For What It's Worth by Kyle Thorpe. All of that can be found over at couriernewsroom.com. We'd love to have you subscribe to some of what we do. Subscribe to the Up North News daily newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com. Time for three things you need to know to get the week started. And for that, we head over to Civic Media News Director Terry Bell. Terry, good morning. How was your weekend?
Good morning, Pat. I had a very nice weekend. Kind of low-key, but nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of grading. It's just as much fun as it sounds.
That's right. You're still... teaching journalism there. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How does that work now? I mean, it used to be we'd sit at a, sit at a typewriter and do the who, what, where, when, why. I mean, now is it, okay, now open your TikTok and point the camera at yourself.
Well, you know, that can't be dismissed. I mean, the role that, social media plays in delivering news, especially to young people. That is certainly something that, and there is in this class I teach right now, a multimedia segment of the class, a module that we do learn about the newer and, non-legacy forms of journalism. So, you know, it's a part of it. It's in the mix.
Oh, without a doubt. And, you know, again, you get any current or former reporters together at a certain age, and they will tell you about how, you know, once upon a time, you had a separate photographer. You may have even had separate people for lighting or sound, you know, depending on the gravity of the story. But nowadays it's a one man band. It's the old Saturday Night Live skit, Al Franken with a little satellite dish on his head. And now one person can broadcast to the world.
Literally. I mean, that's funny. So you and I, we cut our teeth at a time when, microwave, if there was a live story to be done remotely, you took a van Mm-hmm. That was just absolutely loaded with equipment out, and then a little antenna had to be raised and all that. Now a reporter can accomplish all of that with a device they can just wear like a backpack, literally.
Yeah, yeah. It is just amazing. But but the journalism, the work does go on, and there will be plenty of journalists who are going to be in La Crosse today covering a visit by the vice president.
Yeah, so again, just goes to show how important Wisconsin is. We're seeing a lot of visits by the president and his administration. So today it's Vice President Kamala Harris in La Crosse. The theme is going to be abortion. This is something that the administration is hammering home for a couple of reasons. One, it helps shore up the base. The latest Marquette poll shows that abortion just edges out the economy as the number one issue for Democrats. So I think it goes to show that they want to be concerned that they are not overlooking their base. And also they see it as an issue that they can beat Republicans on, that, you know, no matter if you identify as conservative, liberal, Republican, or Democrat, a majority of people support abortion rights in general. And Democrats and the Biden administration feel they have a winning issue here.
Absolutely. And for folks who, by the way, just my own personal editorial comment on Kamala Harris coming, if you're still saying like Kamala and, you know, not getting it right, it's no different than saying the Democrat Party. You're not being funny. You're not being edgy. You're just bordering on being a jerk. So it's Kamala Harris. Let's get it right, everybody. Also, we mentioned over the weekend a couple times here, the House of Representatives finally got off the schneid and passed some essential bills for our allies. It may or may not lead to, you know, another Speaker of the House being deposed by his own party.
Well, sure, because to get the votes, Speaker Mike Johnson reached across the aisle to get Democrats. And so the House is approving aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. That bill now goes to the Senate, which might vote on it as soon as tomorrow. But yes, this is causing fissures within certain factions of the right. And now the faction led by Marjorie Taylor Greene is threatening to try to remove Speaker Mike Johnson. So here we go now. Democrats may be more inclined to support Speaker Johnson now than they ever have before, basically because he's the devil they know. Even though they wouldn't be their first choice, he wouldn't be their first choice for Speaker, that of all the alternatives they might be looking at if Taylor Greene goes ahead with their threats, that, you know, that they can live with and they can work with.
Right. And look, in the past, it's been Democrats saying, we're just going to stay out of this. This is your food fight. And if it makes you look bad, you know, that's on you. At this point now, I mean, the spending bills have been passed. The foreign aid bills have been passed. So really, a lot of the heavy lifting has been done. And so you could say Democrats saying, okay, fine, we're going to help Speaker Johnson stay in his seat, but it's not setting a precedent. It's getting us to Election Day without any further chaos. But again, Democrats, again, might say, nope, you guys figure it out. Make yourselves look bad if you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it seems to be.
The third thing is dealing with the state Supreme Court, and its hearing that was held last week, hearing arguments on the rulemaking authority of some of the legislature's committees.
Right. And on the surface, this might seem like kind of inside baseball, but it really has far-reaching implications. So what we have now is a system where certain committees can hold up money, can basically overrule a governor on a lot of, you know, bills that pass the legislature, then get signed. If, you know, since the Republicans don't have enough votes to override a veto, this is an avenue that they've been using much, much more. And we've seen it with things most recently, like the $4 million for the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program. But we've seen it for things like raises for UW employees. We've seen it in the PFAS pollution cleanup money up in your neck of the woods, the Chippewa Valley Hospitals crisis. The Joint Finance Committee in particular has been, you know, flexing its muscles. And now the governor wants the Supreme Court to decide that, you know, bills that pass, you know, that should be the last word when the governor signs them, unless there is a veto override, you know, in the legislature.
And you, for those who would wonder, well, since the Supreme Court is now controlled by, you know, progressive justices, why would Republicans, you know, want to continue playing this particular political game, it probably helps them, you know, in the 2025 Supreme Court election if they can paint the current Supreme Court as being, you know, overtly liberal or tool of the Democratic Party or whatever. It probably serves them, but it doesn't get any of these problems fixed any earlier, you know, where we could actually have cooler heads prevail. They don't have to be all politics all the time. Terry Bell, three things you need to know from the Civic Media Newsroom. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pat.
Have a great day over you there. Too. Greg, you have a great day as well. We'll see you with Matt and Air on Air coming up just a couple of hours from now. Again, you can follow me on social media on Facebook at Pat Kreitlow Up North and on Twitter, Threads, and Instagram and TikTok at Pat Kreitlow. Thanks for joining us up here on the lake on this Monday morning. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning, 6 a.m.